From the Jackalope Studios, high above the city in the beautiful Barrie View Castle, welcome to the Harmony Health Hour, reconnecting spirit, mind, and body, with your host, Dr. Daryl Drumright. You're not the only one I've ever had, and if I say I want to set you free, don't you know you'll be in misery? They call me Dr. Love. They call me Dr. Love. I've got the cure you're thinking of. Call me Dr. Love.
Hey everybody, it's Friday night on Jackalope. This is Dr. Drumright in the Harmony Health Hour to kick everything off here. We got a busy show tonight. We got a lot of news this week we're going to cover and kind of give our touch and opinion on a lot of different things. It's hot out here. It's March 30th. It's going to be 89 degrees this weekend here in Kansas City, and we're going to get into that later tonight. The theme of the show tonight is the good, the bad, ugly, and the terrifying. So we got at least four different things we're going to talk about. I wanted to let you know that you can always get a hold of me if you have health-related questions while I'm on the air at 310-928-7857. And a special treat tonight, if you log on to my Facebook, Harmony Health, Facebook/Harmony Health, and type in there Live Long and Prosper, I will give you a $25 gift certificate to the clinic here to be used however you want to use it.
Very nice.
First person that puts on there Live Long and Prosper and tells me that on the Facebook, we'll make sure we get you a nice gift certificate.
Very nice.
All right. So let's get things started tonight. This is in honor of Todd. We're reading from the Tao Te Ching, Ralph Ellen Dale's interpretation. By the way, I had a doctor down in Springfield who listens to this show who went out and picked up one of these books the other day. You can get these at Barnes & Noble. It's a big white book, hardback, with like a silver stick plant on the front. It says Lao Tzu at the top and Tao Te Ching at the bottom. A new translation and commentary by Ralph Allen Dale. Very worth your money. It's got a lot of pictures and really good stuff. As it goes through, it gives the Chinese actual pictograms at the start and with several different translations. The portion of the book that I read here in the show is the last section of the book as we go back through the 81 verses just with the English translations and then Dr. Dale's commentary, which is my favorite part. So verse number 57 tonight is called Simplicity Blossoms When Coercion Dies. Govern a state with predictable actions. Fight a war with surprise attacks. But the universe becomes ours only by eliminating coercive acts. By not doing, nothing lacks. How do we know these lessons? By turning into our essence. The more taboos and prohibitions there are, the poorer the people become. The more deadly weapons there are, the more our fears turn us numb. When craftiness spreads far, the more bizarre what is done. The stricter the laws there are, the less the robbers run. Therefore the wise know to make no one a foe. The less coercing we do, the more tranquillities grow. When harmony reigns and we rule ourselves with felicity, everyone gains and we'll all live in simplicity. There is a popular saying that monkeys, this is the commentary, popular saying that money is the root of all evil. That's a cover-up. The real root of all evil is coercion. Money is the bribe that enforces inequality, inequitable exchanges. When bribes are insufficient, then brute force must become modus vivendi. If coercion is the enemy, then cooperation is the liberator. When coercion dies, the great integrity is reborn. When harmony reigns and we rule ourselves with felicity, everyone gains and we'll all live in simplicity. I was talking on a topic similar to this today on Facebook. Somebody was saying that my libertarian philosophy sounds awesome, but it's an agrarian, old school kind of stuff, and it doesn't work in the modern world.
Kind of nutty?
Yeah, well, my point back to him was the resurgence of a libertarian mindset, which is kind of like classic liberalism, where everybody is equal and we all have equal rights, is rooted in the internet. It's rooted in the global village of individual-to-individual communication, where you actually can express your First Amendment right to freedom of speech without fear that somebody's going to beat you up for saying something to them. You can actually tell somebody exactly how you feel and not worried about getting punched in the face because you actually hurt their feelings or said something they didn't want you to say. So the bulliness and the oppression and the stuff that can occur in face-to-face contact is diminished through the internet and through things like Facebook. So in these social networking, these evolving places where we can all talk to each other, say stupid things, say smart things, say whatever you want to say, and then we all migrate into clusters around other people that seem to be saying things that we tend to like and like hearing, then you have a little courage to open up a communication with somebody who's saying exactly the opposite of what you're saying, and then you can sit down and hash it out back and forth, and not worry about he's going to pull out a gun and shoot you because you're saying something anti-Christian or you're saying something anti-Muslim or you're saying something that, you know, goes against his worldview. We can actually challenge each other's worldview in a safe environment, and in so doing, we discover our similarities far outsize our differences. Most everybody would like a peaceful place to raise their family. They would like a place where they could follow their heart's content, be productive, and make something, and then feel value by what they've been able to do. When a person is kept from being productive and kept in line and taught to be a consumer, that all their entire purpose is to consume the production of somebody else so the system can keep going, that's what we had, and that's what is failing us. I likened it to a blind alley. What's happened is we've had several generations of people that have been taught to expect to be taken care of. And when you have expectations, you're always going to be disappointed. That's a fact of life. Expectations of other people will always disappoint you. You have to own your own life. You have to put yourself up on the table and realize life is a series of adventures with few moments of bliss, but most of the time it's painful, it's stressful, it's one problem to solve after the other, but it's your life. And the libertarian mindset clearly says, your life is your life, my life is my life. We have a different path, yet we can share the road by sticking to basic principles that no one has the right to initiate violence against anyone else. If you don't initiate violence, then we can talk this out. We can find our differences and talk about our differences and find what we our similarities and what we have in common. The key is violence. So I was talking to a guy the other day. He was a military veteran and big, you know, scared of the Muslims and all that kind of stuff. And you know, and I was talking him through it. You know, he's saying that, well, I'm a Taoist Christian, you know, I'm a martial artist, and I would never initiate violence myself. I said, yeah, but yet you're promoting a position where a government can initiate violence in a proactive state. In other words, a preemptive strike against a perceived threat is somehow okay, even though you wouldn't do that yourself because you'd be considered a bully if you go around and beat somebody up because the fourth grader starts poking you and calling you names and you're the security guard on the school, so you go beat him up because he's mouthing off. You know, that's a bully. Everybody knows it's a bully. Everybody picks the sides of the weakling against the bully. But yet, when it comes to nations and states, they lose the connection here that it's okay to be a bully because this person may be a threat later on, so we can bully them around and go kick their ass now. I can say that, right?
You can.
Okay. And so that they don't threaten us later. And what I'm trying to get a point across to him is you have to have a good training for defensive purposes so that nobody bullies you around. That's important. You have to have your defenses, a strong military in a nation state or a well-trained body in a personal state. Defend yourself with as much force as you can possibly generate to deflect bullies before they get to you. But the moment that you initiate the violence, then you are no longer in the position of honor. You are now the bully. You are now the terrorist. You are the one that's starting the violent cycle. And that is what terrorism is the use or threat of use of violence to manipulate the behavior of someone else. It's not a religion, it's just a technique of controlling other people. So the technique of using force or violence to get what you want is terrorism. No matter whether it's a person or an entire group of people or what some people will call a nation. I think I got through to him because, I mean, you just bring it back to the person, the libertarian mindset that each individual is unique and separate and no one has the right to use violence or force on anyone else. And then you expand that out to cultures and societies and states where no state has the right to initiate force or violence on any other state, or any group of people has the right to use force or violence against any other group of people. You can say what you want to say, sticks or stones can break my bones. You have the freedom of speech to say whatever you want to say, but you just cannot initiate violence. And so we have a very strong defense posture that if somebody does initiate violence, then you go kick their ass. You bust the bully busters. You make sure nobody else does that. But then you have the very responsible position with the superpower is that you cannot act like that. You can't be preemptive. You can't go around saying, well, you might be a threat, so we're just going to come in and bomb the everything out of you right now. Well, don't worry, we'll pay to rebuild it later. But, you know, that kind of behavior is not acceptable in the modern world. Secrets are gone. The world of backroom deals and secret deals and dependency on experts is over. You know, 20 years ago when I graduated a chiropractic school and became a doctor, there was no internet. Everybody depended on experts. You had to go to the doctor to tell you what's wrong with you because you didn't know. Your public education didn't teach you anything about your own anatomy or what's wrong with your body. You had to go to the expert. Now, 20 years later, you can go ask Google. Now, it's going to give you a lot of stuff that you don't understand and a lot of things that aren't right. But you got to learn how to sift through that and follow references. And then you can go to the doctor well-armed with some preliminary knowledge and more intelligent questions. So instead of saying, doctor, I don't know what's going on, fix me. And you say, doctor, I think this is happening here or this is happening there. What do you think about that?
What was that?
I don't know, but I am mature, but I'm not rated in.
I must have hit something with my elbow.
Yeah. Watch that elbow there, Todd.
I know it.
All right. So let's move on to verse number 58. I think that was my cue to move on. Verse number 58. Alternatives. When a government is more benign, the people are more productive. When a government is more tyrannical, the people are more rebellious. This is so true. But whatever the government... But whatever the government, if disaster is the bitter fruit of others' good fortune, how long can such injustice be tolerated? How long we have endured the hypocrisies? Let me read that again. But whatever the government, if disaster is the bitter fruit of others' good fortune, how long can such injustice be tolerated? How long have we have endured the hypocrisies? Those pretending to be righteous act deceitfully. Those pretending to be religious revert to evil. We have been deluded, and each day it becomes worse. Be firm and armed, but do no harm. Be as sharp as a knife, but do not cut. Be ready to transform, but do not provoke. Illuminate the darkness of ignorance, but do not be blind. Wow. Did I just say that?
Yep.
That is awesome. What he's saying here, and let me read Dr. Dale's commentary first. Even in Lao Tzu's time, the impoverishment of some people was the source of others' good fortune. This is the redistribution of wealth. You know, you think that you're going to take from one people and give it to the other, but what happens is the power gets redistributed. One group of people get the power to take and give, and that power is given to them by the people that never wind up with power. So you might wind up with some trinkets, but you've given up the power in trade for trinkets. These injustices, he says, were rationalized by deceits which have deluded the people for so long. Yeah, I would say 2,300 years now. It seems that each day, from Lao Tzu's time to our own, the hypocrisies have continued to escalate. Since there are about 1 million days that have intervened, one could say that we have become separated from the great integrity about 1 million times further than those who lived in the 6th century BCE. What shall we do? Lao Tzu's advice in the last stanza is still sound. We need to be firm, clear, and prepared to transform our lives. But the process should be one without arrogance or provocation, never victimizing others as we have been victimized. There you have it, folks. From 2,400 years ago to today, the answer is still the same. Powerful defense, but then respect and honor of your position of power. Don't use it to redistribute what you think is right or wrong. You got to let people have their own lives. Be free, be well defended, but don't attack and force your will on other people, because it won't work. It'll backfire, it'll blow back, you'll wind up pissing people off instead of helping them, and you'll wind up creating dependents or slaves versus helping people be free. It doesn't work. All right, Todd, that's the end of the first segment here, the Tao Te Ching. Anybody has health problems, call us at 310-928-7857. Let's take a quick break here, and we'll get back to some news.
Sounds good.
All right.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much. I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight. Place to raise your kids. In fact, it's cold as hell, and there's no one there to raise them. If you did, and all the science I don't understand. Just my job 5 days a week. A rocket man, a rocket man. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till touchdown brings me round again. I am at home. Oh no, no. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time.
You're listening to Dr. Daryl Drumright and the Harmony Health Hour on Jackalope Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Dr. Drumright. This is the news section of our radio show. We've got several articles here. I'm going to scoop ABC on one of these and get right into this. This segment's called The Good, The Bad, The Ugly, and The Terrifying. So, the good. Chocolate. You like chocolate, Todd?
I do.
Did you see the new research on chocolate?
I have not.
I got some brand new stuff out there on chocolate.
I'm ready.
All right. To say that chocolate will go straight to your hips is passe. The latest research says you will actually weigh less. Wait. Before you reach for the chocolate bar, you have to read between the fine lines of the research. While researchers in San Diego revealed that antioxidants in chocolate are not only good for lowering blood pressure and cholesterol, but also your weight, there is merit in understanding first and binging later. Let's delve deeper. Led by Beatrice Golem, research at the University of California used data from a study of cholesterol-lowering drugs on healthy adults. The new research took into account how often the study's subjects ate chocolate and how this related to their weight management. The original study included 1,000 individuals between the age groups of 20 and 85 with an average body mass index of 28. That's overweight, but not quite obese. Golem's research found that people who ate chocolates often consumed higher calorie food, especially saturated fats, but still lost weight. On the flip side, the study revealed that individuals who consumed far less chocolates weighed more than the chocolate lovers. However, the study's findings may not be taken as face value, as the reason behind this link between chocolate consumption and weight loss remains unclear. As scientists always say, we need more research. Bring me some chocolate. Let's do some research, Todd. This is partly due to the fact that the sample group wasn't large enough to derive any conclusive evidence about chocolate's weight-controlling properties. But within its scope, the research did find that individuals who ate up to 5 servings of chocolate a week weighed 2.3 to 3.2 kilograms less than individuals who rarely ate chocolate. There's a lot of things in dark chocolate that we still don't understand. A lot of flavonoids, a lot of metabolic stimulants, a lot of anti-cancer ingredients. There's a lot of really cool stuff in those dark chocolate things.
I love them.
Not milk chocolate.
You know, right, dark chocolate.
Dark chocolate. An interesting point to note is that the weight loss was linked to the number of times chocolate was consumed in a week. This is especially important when you analyze that the frequency of consumption had something to do with portion control and lack of starvation mode. Golem concludes, if you consume chocolate, consume it in place of something else rather than adding to your net daily calories. Researchers were unanimous about the fact that chocolate should be eaten in moderation. What do we say around here always? The three treasures? Love, moderation, and humility. So moderation comes through in the food you eat.
Yep.
Okay. That's the good. Here's the bad. I'm going to just kind of highlight this is going to be on 60 Minutes this Sunday. Is sugar toxic? Dr. Robert Lustig, a pediatric endocrinologist at the University of California, same place, believes the high amount of sugar in the American diet, much of it as processed foods, is killing us. And as Dr. Sanjay Gupta reports, new scientific research seems to support his theory that sugar is toxic, including some linking the excess ingestion of sugars to heart disease. Gupta's report will be broadcast on 60 Minutes Sunday, April 1st at 7 p.m. Americans are now consuming nearly 130 pounds of added sugars per person per year. 130 pounds of added sugar per person per year.
Jeez.
There's 300 million Americans.
That's a lot of sugar.
Yeah. Wow. Those include both sugar and high fructose corn syrup. And while many vilify high fructose corn syrup and believe it is worse than sugar, Dr. Lustig says metabolically there is no difference. They are basically equivalent. The problem is they're both bad. They're both equally toxic, he says. Dr. Lustig treats sick, obese children who he believes are primarily sick because of the amount of sugar they ingest. He says this sugar not only leads to obesity, but to type 2 diabetes, hypertension, and heart disease itself. Something needs to be done, says Dr. Lustig. Ultimately, this is a public health crisis. You have to do big things, and you have to do them across the board, he tells Gupta. Tobacco and alcohol are perfect examples, he says, referring to the regulations imposed on their consumption and warnings on their labels. I think sugar belongs in this exact same wastebasket. You know, I don't like government controls, but we've got the one thing we can do is honest labeling. You know, have if you're going to go to the food, if you're going to eat processed food, you ought to have the ability to know what the heck's in there. And then we need some grade school education on carbohydrates. What is a simple carbohydrate? What is a complex carbohydrate? Which carbohydrates, the fructose and the simples, are bad that cause diabetes? And which ones, like the galactoses and the more complex carbohydrates, that aren't bad? Your body can use those and without any kind of risk of diabetes. A recent study supports the idea that excess consumption of high fructose corn syrup is linked to an increase in risk factors for heart disease by increasing a type of cholesterol that can clog the arteries. You know, I've been saying that for almost 20 years. Your cholesterol is part of your immune system, okay? The cholesterol absorbs free radicals from high fructose corn syrup and these sugars. Your liver produces extra cholesterol to absorb these free radicals that are brought on by this consumption. Taking an extra statin pill poison to get your body to stop defending itself is just stupid. It makes lots of money for the drug companies, but it just doesn't make sense. The University of California Davis study also indicated that calories from added sugars are different than those from other foods. Subjects had 25% of their caloric intake replaced with sweetened drinks. The nutritional biologist Kimber Stanhope was surprised to see that after only 2 weeks, we found that subjects who consumed high fructose corn syrup had increased levels of low-density lipoprotein cholesterol, the bad stuff, and other risk factors for cardiovascular disease. I started eating and drinking a whole lot less sugar, she told Gupta. So this is increased levels, 2 weeks of eating high fructose corn syrup, drinking soda pop, you see noticeable increased levels of your bad cholesterol in your blood because it's your immune system. It's doing that on purpose. It's increasing the LDLs in the serum to protect you from the toxins that you're consuming. So don't go to the doctor and he takes your blood test and sees the high cholesterol and gives you another drug to get the cholesterol out. Stop consuming the sugars that are causing the problem in the first place. What happens, says Dr. Stanhope, is the liver gets overloaded with fructose and converts some of it into fat, which gets into the bloodstream to create small, dense lipoproteins, the kind of LDLs that forms plaque in the arteries. The irony here is that for precisely that reason, avoiding heart disease, a government commission in the 1970s mandated we lower our fat consumption. When you take the fat out of food, it tastes like cardboard, said Dr. Lustig, and the food industry knew that, so they replaced it with sugar. And guess what? Heart disease, metabolic syndrome, diabetes, and death are skyrocketing. So it's not the fat, although trans fats and processed fats are definitely bad for you. It's the sugar that's causing all the heart disease. I put people on high-fat, high-protein diets all the time. The only carbohydrate you should be consuming at all is plant-based complex carbohydrates and chocolate, which is plant-based complex carbohydrate. Yeah. Other scientific work shows that sugar could also be helping some cancer tumors to grow because sugar stimulates the production of the hormone insulin. Nearly a third of common cancers, such as some breast cancer and colon cancers, contain insulin receptors that eventually signal the tumor to consume glucose. Lewis Cantley, a Harvard professor and head of the Beth Israel Deaconess Cancer Center, says some of those cancers have learned to adapt to an insulin-rich environment. They have evolved the ability to hijack that flow of glucose that's going by in the bloodstream into tumor itself. What does that sugar industry have to say about this? Gupta spoke with Jim Simmon, a member of the board of the Sugar Association. To say that the American consuming public is going to eliminate sweeteners out of their diet, I don't think gets us there, he says. Simone points out that the science is not completely clear, need more research, and it's wrong to single out one food because the real emphasis should be on long-term reduction of calories, balanced diet, and exercise. Blah, blah, blah. What kind of craziness is that?
All right. What's the bottom line, Doc? What's the bottom line on this stuff?
Bottom line is processed sugar is bad. It's chemical. It's a drug, okay? Food is plants and animals. Okay, it's something you recognize that was alive recently. All right, you go pick the cane sugar and chew the cane sugar, you're going to be fine. But if you process it and treat it and bleach it and turn it into a little white granular substance like cocaine, it is like cocaine. It's a drug. Does it get you high? Yes, it gets you high. It makes your tongue go, woo, yay, I like that, woo. It's a drug. Drugs are bad, all right? So if you're eating stuff for the sweetness, then you're hitting high fructose corn syrup, you're getting sugar additives, and the artificial sweeteners are even worse. You're getting high, and you're going to pay the price. So if you want something sweet, eat a strawberry. Go eat some pineapple. You know, eat something real. Then you're not going to have any problem at all with diabetes, heart disease, and multiple cancers. You know, to expound on what this guy's talking about, cancer. It's not that the cancer, I love the way he says they evolve the ability to hijack. Cancer is you. It's your own cells. It's human cells with the DNA, the same DNA that all the rest of your cells have. It has the same ability to consume sugar or whatever it needs to consume, but it's lazy, so it loves sugar. So if you saturate the body with sugar, the little tumors that are all in all of us, see, everybody's a cancer survivor. I know that's unpolitically correct to say that because you have all these cancer survivors out there that have been through hell by the medical professions. And I absolutely respect you for that. I mean, you've been through hell. I understand that. But the truth is, everybody's got cancer. Cancer is normal. We all have it. In the trillions of cells that our body has, there's many of them that are mutated and weirdos. And, you know, the immune system recognizes them and kicks them out. But if you're consuming high fructose corn syrup and processed sugars, then that's fertilizer for cancer. And so if you these cancer cells you have in you, you're giving them extra candy, extra fertilizer, so they grow. The insulin that's caused from the spike of the sugar consumption also reduces your immune system and causes cholesterol to clog up your arteries. So you have these deficiencies that begin to occur in the other energy-producing parts of the body. So your immune system is suppressed, so it can't recognize the tumors growing. At the same time, you're feeding the tumors. So your consumption of these processed sugars feeds the tumors, helps them grow, helps them get started, gets your cancer into a big old whirl where it can mutate and cause all kinds of problems. At the same time, it's suppressing your immune system on the other side, which is your defensive system. And then your cholesterol goes up. So what do? You go take a statin drug to lower the cholesterol down because the doctor doesn't like what your blood records say, and he's not even looking at what you're eating all day. So now he takes your immune system down anymore. So now you're still feeding the cancer because nobody told you that what's going on here. And you wonder, oh, where'd my cancer? Oh, whoa. Me, I got cancer. It's in my genes. It's in my genes. You know, I got. Oh, my parents had it, so I must have it. Well, your parents had it because they ate the same crap you're eating. We got 3-4 generations of American eating crap out there. It's not food at all. It's processed, chemical, faux food, fake foods. All right, Todd, you got me going now, man.
Good.
All right, let's move on. That's the bad. Now we're gonna go on to the ugly. Okay. This is another brand new study. This is from the U.S. Senate. Okay. The decades-old firestorm debate over whether or not thimerosal in vaccines causes autism got heated up last week when Jenny McCarthy made her accusations on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Maybe you saw that. I don't watch Oprah.
No way.
The U.S. Senate has just released a report after an 18-month-long investigation of the Food and Drug Administration and the Center for Disease Control, the FDA and the CDC, concerning thimerosal, mercury, levels in pediatric vaccines and the rising rates of neurological disorders in U.S. children, autism, Asperger's, these kind of things. Their verdict? The FDA is guilty of forcing parents to inoculate their children with hazardous amounts of poisonous mercury in the name of disease control.
Nuts.
So this is the U.S. Senate saying that the executive branch and the Food and Drug Administration is using its unconstitutional force to mandate and coerce American parents into injecting toxins into their little kids and telling them that that's actually good for them. Now, that's ugly. See how I'm saying the good, the bad, the ugly? This is just ugly. It's corruption to the core. Two allegations were sustained, and one allegation was partially substantiated. The FDA inappropriately utilized Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, guidelines regarding the dangers of mercury in vaccine-containing thimerosal. What this is saying is the FDA, which regulates the stuff you put in your body directly, food and drugs, is using the Environmental Protection Agency's regulations, which is another branch of the executive department. Neither one of these things are constitutional law. They're completely outside the rule book. But they're coercing with each other, which are both sponsored by the same chemical companies, Monsanto and friends, that are running both these things, to make a recommendation that no, mercury's not bad for you. You know, it's only bad for you if it's in the fish. It's not bad for you if we inject it right into your veins. Come on. In short, the FDA estimated the toxicity of thimerosal in vaccines required by law to be administered to countless infants and children. The Senate report also indicated that the Institute of Medicine of the Natural Academy of Science screened potential committee members for possible conflicts of interest. Whoa. Hey, there's some news. The guys that working for the government are also getting paychecks from the corporations they're supposed to be regulating.
Go figure.
Yeah. Then reviewed the evidence and found no link between mercury exposure from vaccines and autism. Government data was inaccessible to researchers seeking to prove thimerosal vaccines in damaging certain populations. Number three, despite the decrease in mercury-laden vaccines for American children, vaccines manufactured and distributed to developing countries still contain thimerosal. Okay, so we raise a big fuss in 1999 and 2000, and they start taking the mercury out of our vaccines. Some of them, not the flu vaccine, a number of them still have thimerosal. So what do? They put it in the vaccines they ship over to Africa to poison their kids.
Nice.
Yeah, that's just so nice. Parents with children suffering from neurological disorders such as autism, ADHD, and Tourette's syndrome. You know what Tourette's syndrome is?
Oh, yeah. Start screaming stuff out. Blah, blah, blah.
Or other transient chronic tic disorders can find out if their child has been overexposed to thimerosal by getting a copy of their child's immunization record. A good article to read on the subject is CDC, Mercury and Vaccines Damage Your Child or Not by David Kirby. If you were informed that mercury in vaccines might double the risk of your son's developing motor tics, increase his risk of phonetics by nearly 2.5 times, and possibly cause speech, attention, and behavior problems in school, would you still allow him to inject it with this heavy metal, which, by the way, is 100 times more neurotoxic than the lead coating on his Chinese toys? And there's politics for you.
Exactly.
The debate rages on. Let's take a break, Todd, and then we'll get back for the absolutely terrifying.
Oh.
That wasn't it.
Uh-oh.
Okay, this is Dr. Drumright, the Harmony Health Hour. Give me a call, 310-928-7857. We'll see you in a minute.
You're listening to Dr. Daryl Drumright and the Harmony Health Hour on Jackalope Radio.
Section number three on Are You Ready to Be Terrified?
I don't know if I am.
Well, this is going to get into a topic that basically gets beyond anything I can teach you how to prepare for, anything you can do anything about whatsoever. The only thing more terrifying than a giant twister on the planet Earth is one on the face of the sun. A monstrous tornado has been observed erupting on our star, and its numbers are staggering. So big, it could swallow five Earths in a single gulp. The swirling vortex observed last September and presented at this week's National Astronomy Meeting in England grew to a height of 125,000 miles, about half the distance between the Earth and the Moon. Now, look at a tornado. Five times bigger than the planet Earth. Can eat five planet Earths. And it extends from the Earth halfway to the Moon. That's like beyond imagination. The temperature of the plume of superheated gas measured between 90,000 degrees and 3.6 million degrees Fahrenheit. Now, that's be hot.
Yeah.
That's kind of hot, yeah. 90,000 degrees and 3.6 million degrees Fahrenheit. And was accelerating to speeds approximately 186,000 miles per hour. We have a tornado around here. It's like if it reaches 200 miles an hour, it's a category 5 and absolutely destructive. You've got a tornado on the face of the sun that's 125,000 miles tall going 186,000 miles per hour.
Man.
At 3.6 million degrees. These are astronomical numbers. So this is a little more stuff going on here. This has happened a couple weeks ago. Government space weather watchers say a new geomagnetic storm is on the way following an eruption on the surface of the sun Friday. This is, I think, March 15th. It should arrive on Earth on Sunday, but like the storm that arrived Thursday and is just passing, the impact is expected to be fairly minimal. It is going to affect the Earth. Okay, now we're going to move down to another thing of what's going on here. Have you watched the Weather Channel lately, Todd?
Every once in a while, I'll catch it.
There's a spring heat wave like no other in the U.S. or Canadian history, peaked in intensity yesterday. This was like March 24th. During its 10th day, since record-keeping began in the late 1800s, there have never been so many temperature records broken for spring warmth in 1 week period. And the margins by which some of these records were broken yesterday were truly astonishing. Wonderground's weather historian Christopher Burt commented to me yesterday, it's almost like science fiction at this point. A few of the more remarkable records from yesterday. Now listen to some of this stuff. Pellston, Michigan, record high, broken by 32 degrees.
Okay.
Pellston, Michigan is the northern lower peninsula is called Michigan's icebox, since it is frequently records the coldest temperature in the state and in the entire nation. But in the past 5 days, Pellston has set five consecutive records for hottest March day. Yesterday's 85 degrees reading broke the previous record for this date, 53 degrees in 2007, by a ridiculous 32 degrees. And was an absurd 48 degrees above average. Low temperatures beat the previous record high for the date at two stations. So their low temperature for the day at Marquette, Michigan, was 52 degrees, which was 3 degrees warmer than the previous record high for that date. The low temperature at Mount Washington, New Hampshire, yesterday, 44 degrees, also beat the previous record high for the date of 43 degrees. Canadian cities break all-time April record for warmth in March. All-time record warmth in April was broken in March in Canada. Not only was yesterday the warmest March day in the recorded history for many of Canada's major cities, it was also warmer than any April day at St. John, New Brunswick. The city hit 78 degrees Fahrenheit. Not only did this crush the record high for March previously, that's 25 degrees Celsius, previously 17 degrees Celsius. It is well above any temperature ever measured in April. Halifax, Nova Scotia hit 25.8 degrees Celsius yesterday, beating their all-time March record of 25.6 degrees and falling just short of their all-time April record of 26.3 degrees set April 30, 2004. As of 1 p.m. today, Halifax was 27 degrees Celsius, beating their all-time April record. Other major cities in Canada set all-time warmest March records yesterday include Ottawa, Montreal, Windsor, Hamilton, London, and Fredericton. So what's causing all this? Wisconsin, Milwaukee, 84 degrees. Madison, 83 degrees. Green Bay, 82 degrees.
Yeah, but I got to point out, last year was record cold spells for the United States here and for the Midwest, when in June it got down in the 30s.
Right. So what's causing this? I am not proposing this is global warming, okay?
No.
Okay. The story goes that we've been hit by massive solar eruptions, and you can look it up on the internet and look at we've got a satellite out there monitoring the sun.
Right.
So we got these massive high energy eruptions bombarded the earth. It didn't affect the computers as much as they thought it would, and then it caused the planes to not fly over the North Pole. But what it has done is it's super energized the ionosphere and the outer atmosphere. And so you have a hot, super energized atmosphere from these solar eruptions that is causing recorded temperatures on the surface of the planet to be temporarily crazily, terrifyingly high. So this isn't a continual phenomenon unless the sun keeps doing what it's doing. And if the sun keeps doing what we're doing, that's where it gets extremely terrifying. You ever see the movie Knowing?
Yeah, I did.
Did we talk about that last week?
No.
No. Remember what happened into that movie?
Yeah. It wasn't good.
No. What can you do to stop that? So if you have a major solar eruption, a flare that extends out past where the planet Earth is, a mega flare, literally engulfing the planet Earth, a little bitty. Hey, here's a trivia question for you, Todd. How big is the planet Earth compared to the sun? That's an eighth grade question. But nobody seems to know the answer.
The Earth compared to the sun?
Mm-hmm.
It would be like maybe a ping pong ball next to a softball.
No.
No?
No.
Was I close?
No. No. You can fit 1.3 million Earths inside the sun.
Man, I was going to say a marble.
No, it's more like
I'm still off.
Yeah, like a BB next to a basketball.
There you go.
Okay.
Well, everyone in America knows I'm a fool.
Well, you're not the only one. I've asked hundreds of people this. And I didn't know it either until I looked it up. Thank God for Google. You can look that kind of stuff up. So let's finish off here in a little bit of a comparison. So the Earth is a BB to a basketball. It's 1.3 millionths of the size of the sun. There are solar arcs right now coming off the surface of the sun that are 100 times larger than our entire planet. And these things are emitting energies in the millions of joules of power, far beyond your imagination of how much energy that the planet Earth needs. Now, think of the human body. How big is the human body compared to the planet Earth?
Oh, it's a dot. It's not even a dot.
I would like to say it's a microbe. It's like a virus, okay?
And we are a virus on the planet Earth.
We are. So let's look at spectrums here, you know? A virus in your body is about the size, probably in a comparison, to what you are on the surface of the planet Earth. So you're a virus. We're a couple billion viruses running around the planet Earth, and then the Earth is 1.3 millionth of the size of the local sun, which is putting out energy in temperatures of 3 million degrees Fahrenheit, things that would absolutely annihilate anything that we consider normal or reality. So to have the ego, as we go back to Lao Tzu, and think that we somehow have a influence over planetary systems is egotistical. It's beyond measure to think that we could actually influence something of those kinds of scales. Now, you want to think about it, a virus or a bacterium can certainly affect a human body. I mean, it can kill you. But you're talking about trillions and trillions and trillions of these bacterium working together to take down a human body. And at current, what was the population of the planet? 7 billion? About 7 billion human beings. You're going to have to multiply that exponentially many times over before you ever think that there's enough human beings to actually create a disease big enough to take out a planet.
Right.
We are nothing. We are our own centers of our own universes by all means, but that doesn't mean much when you scale out to a planetary measure or to a solar system measure. We are insignificant viruses on your dog's tip of your dog's tail. Nothing there. So there you go. There's the good, the bad, and the absolutely terrifying. If a solar flare hit, there's nothing you can do except live your life between now and then to the maximum adventure that you can possibly drum up. Go out, love it, and enjoy it. Don't be worried about stuff so much as you live the good life. How are we doing, Todd?
We are doing great.
What else you got going on later
on? We got Dean Haglund coming up next with the Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. Got him check around. Just keep around for that. I can talk, really. Then we've got Brad Westmar show up after that to make everyone laugh a little bit. And then we're going to creep people out with Mike Ghostgetter and the Nightbreed show.
Nice summer night. Spring night that feels like summer.
Feels like summer.
Midwest. It's going to be in 80 degrees tomorrow. I guess you can tail off the show with some nice music there, Todd, to finish this off.
You got it.
Everybody have a great week, and we'll see you next week at the Harmony Health Hour. Stay in touch.
Good night.
Don't criticize, wanna pick up with pricing you.